Welcome to the Law of Non-Resistance. Many of us have heard ourselves at times say or think, wow, this is too good to be true. Or, I don't think this is going to last. Or, well, I wonder when the other shoe will drop. These are sort of ideas that have been implanted in the mass thinking of all of us. And to even notice when we are holding thoughts that actually resist the greater good that would flow naturally into our lives, if we could understand this law of non-resistance, that there is something very powerful in the idea of releasing the resistance we have to the good that is ours by our birthright.
I had a group of teenagers that were in a meeting in Hawaii. Now, I had been working with these teens on the phone in meetings, but this was a live meeting. And I asked them, I said, what's the difference between responding and reacting? Now, I got some real wild and funny answers back. And there was a young lady, she would be 15, 16, from New York. She was staring off into space, and she was obviously really thinking about the question. And she said, reacting is a habit. To respond, we have to think. And I thought, wow, is that ever good? In our conditioning, in our genetic and environmental conditioning, our paradigm has us reacting to situations. So when we talk about the law of non-resistance, it's not a law that most people are involved with, that they really understand. Because when a bad situation comes up, most people will fight it. They will resist it, and they react to it. You see, the reacting is a habit. It's an automatic response, because a habit is an idea that's fixed in our subconscious mind that we act on without giving any conscious thought. So non-resistance, it's not where we come from. It really isn't. It's not from our conditioning. We're conditioned to resist because we're conditioned to react. And if we look at it, I think Halliwell's put some pretty good comments in here on this law of non-resistance. This is a law that you want to study. I mean, really study, because it's very, very good. For example, in our business world, we hear about the psychology of salesmanship, service, credit, free deliveries, expert advisors, and every other aid conceivable that will help us find the right pots and pans for the kitchen, the proper style or color of a crib for the nursery, the chair for the fireplace, and the accessories that are so necessary to show off the living room effectively. In fact, there's one business that advertises, we have everything under the sun. So no matter what you need, you can find it here. Now, that's good business, you say, and the department heads know business is good as long as they use this law. Why do you suppose they keep the doors wide open in the stores where you go to shop? Certainly it's not to let the fresh air in. And I want you to think about this. I remember one of my mentors, Leland Val Vandewal. The man was wise beyond belief, and I loved him dearly. He used to do a little skit in a seminar on this, and, you know, as I get into Halliwell's work, I often wonder, is this where he got it? Because it's such a good one. Now, some of the people that are in this program, you may not be old enough to remember this, but then there would be others who will be old enough to remember this. Before we had the large shopping malls and the big plazas, there were little strips of stores on the street. And they were built, I suppose, really, when there wasn't real heavy traffic. But as the traffic started to pick up and the more people were driving cars, there was very poor parking space. And, of course, the demand created the supply. That's where the big malls came from. But if you would look at the stores, think of a butcher shop. The butcher shop usually had a window with meat in it, and the showcase would be sloping down toward the glass window, and there was usually a trough at the bottom to catch the blood that rolled off the meat. And if you opened the door, there was sawdust all over the floor to catch the blood that would be dropped on the floor. And there was a bell on the door. When you opened it, it would go bing, bang, bing, bang, bing, bang. And you'd walk in, and the butcher would be standing there, possibly with a big white apron and a side of beef maybe on a block at the end of the counter. And he'd be wiping his hands on this white apron. He said, "Could I help you?" Well, really what we probably should have said, "No, but I could help you," because you see, he was resisting business. Now, I want you to compare those stores with the stores that we have today. You drive on to about an acre of parking lot that's all marked out so it's easy for you to see the space for you to park your car. As you go close to the door to the stores, you don't have to touch anything. They automatically open in front of you. And as you walk through the door, everything's lit. Doesn't matter where you stand, it's a vantage point, because what is in each aisle is clearly marked high up. There's soft music playing in the background, and there may be somebody standing there offering a sample of some new product. They don't need your money. They've already got it. You see, they're practicing this law of non-resistance. Now, if we go back to the old butcher shop, that butcher was real glad to see you because he really did need your money. But you see the difference. Now, the one was operating, he was resisting business. He was putting blocks up in front of it. The other one, non-resistance. Now, granted, we have to go back a little ways in time to really get the picture of the old butcher shop, and the new one is present day. So what we're really talking about here is an increase in conscious awareness of business leaders. That does not mean that everyone in the business has that conscious awareness. They may not even know why the door swung open, why you can wander anywhere freely in the store. You see, it used to be you had to ask somebody, they'd go get it off the shelf and bring it to you. You couldn't just go in and pick it up yourself. Now you can even check yourself out. You just take the stuff and you fan it, and electronically it takes the money out of your bank. Like I say, they don't need your business. They automatically got it. Now, Raymond Hollywell, he uses another example. He's talking about a young man wishing to meet that certain young lady. And they try every means to gain an introduction. Then he'll put his best foot forward, act his very best, make the most pleasing impression. Why all this extra effort? Well, he wants to make it easy for the young lady to like him and get to know him better. He's trying to sell her on the idea that he is her best choice for a companion or a friend. And he may be doing all this unconsciously, but what he's really doing is using the law of non-resistance. Now, why does this young man put his best foot forward? Oh, you say it's only natural. It's a habit or a custom. Well, that may be true, yet we become so governed by habit and custom that there are times that we, in working for prosperity and good health, unconsciously put opposition in our path through this force of habit. You see, many of our habits, our paradigms, has us working against the law. We resist. Just watch people as you go through the day. Watch them in the shopping malls. Watch people maybe in your own family. And if something happens that's disagreeable, they react to it rather than responding. The more you study this law of non-resistance, I have studied this and I've taught this to many business people, and I have never yet taught it in a business group where the people didn't love it, because what we were doing was bringing a beautiful concept to the front of their consciousness, and they're thinking, yeah, I never thought of that. It's worth thinking about.
Bob, that reminds me, a friend of mine whose name is Gay Hendricks, I called him on the cell phone once. Gay is a very successful businessman and an extremely bright author and student of these life laws. So I called him one day, and he sounded kind of noisy where I was, and I said, "Where are you, Gay?" And he very calmly goes, "I am in the monastery of the L.A. traffic." And later when I asked him about that, he said that he had made a choice, that traffic he couldn't control, but his response to being in traffic was completely his. And he said that particular day, he had come up with an idea that within 3 months had produced $1 million for him. Now, we could choose to be in resistance to the traffic we're in, or we could choose how we're going to be in that moment, non-resistance. Now, the resistance that you and I are employing right now, and you can bet that you are, because you're in an evolutionary growth cycle, which means that no matter how big you've gotten, no matter how available you are to the great law of life, we're still each evolving. So wherever your resistance is, this moment, this lesson becomes an opportunity for us to have a breakthrough by recognizing some of the patterns we may still be employing that create resistance. So we can say, I want success, I want fulfillment, I want an increase of material wealth. But anytime we are agreeing with conditions that are difficult, anytime we talk about how somebody else got ahead and it was unfair, or any type of energy that is of a lower nature or out of harmony with the thing we say we want, we actually are creating resistance to the very thing we want. So Hollowell tells a story about a man who said, I want to increase my business. I'm going to have a big sale. And he sent out everything that he could to notify people about the sale. But the day of the sale, he barred the door. He locked everything up. And nobody could buy anything. So he actually blocked his good. And he said, while the example isn't real, it's a real example of how we do things. We say we want something, but we actually bar the door to its experience, its entry, and our experience of what's possible for us. So Hollowell says, one time a student wrote to him and said, I am working hard over limitation, for I've had enough of it. And Hollowell says, my answer to her was, stop working over limitation and start working over your prosperity, over your abundance. The law does not require us to work over or against the things that we do not want, but it does require us to work with and for that which we do want. So we don't give our time, our thought, our energy to that which is opposed to what we want, that is actually setting up a resistance that is contrary to the law, and it actually bars the way of our good coming into us. So then how do we open up? How do we experience a greater flow? By being non-resistant, by being in agreement with all that is prosperous and using every means at our command to make it easy for prosperity, for abundance, the free flow of life to be in our experience. Now, we all know that water is very powerful, and yet it is a perfect non-resistant element. We can see where it has worn away even the hardest rock. You can go to the Grand Canyon and be stunned and amazed by the power of non-resistance over time, and actually, it is one of the most beautiful spots on the entire planet. And we have also seen the power of water sweep everything before its torrential outburst. Bridges, buildings, trees, nothing can withstand its force. Yet note how the great river begins. It starts as a little stream or brook high up in the mountains where the ice and the snow feed it in the springtime. And it's usually very crooked in the beginning. It's nothing like the great river that it's going to flow into. But the little stream of water just runs over the boulders or the fallen tree or the debris made of bushes. It doesn't stop and wait for its energy or its force to build up so it can push the obstacle out of its path. It's not interested so much in the boulder or the tree as it is about creating or getting to what it wants. Now, this works for us. It's a way that you and I can understand how we can be one with the law of non-resistance. You know, Bob, recently my husband and I were in Oregon, and we went to a place called Camp Sherman, where one of the great rivers of Oregon begins, to the headwaters of the Batolius River. And I'd been to headwaters of other rivers. Usually they do come just as a little stream coming out of the ground. But this particular river comes out of the ground 50 feet wide. And you know that there was an underground river coming out of the Cascade Mountains, and it was just moving along, and at its first opening, which happened to be a fault line, and the fault line was big enough, 50 feet comes out, and it's a mighty river. It's 50 feet wide, flowing freely when it first comes out. And it was so amazing to me because it just spoke to me that as soon as I make the opening, the energy's there. It's a free-flowing spirit just waiting for my opening.
What a beautiful concept. That is so true. It's all there. All we have to do is let it go. See, this, I believe, is where the relaxed attitude comes in. I mentioned Sharon Benigby's company in Toronto, calmconfidence.com, and she teaches people to relax. And I have seen many letters that have been sent to her where they're so grateful. See, when people are uptight, their body's breaking down. Well, we've got to learn to relax. We've got to learn to be loose and let the energy flow freely through us. I remember Branch Rickey, who had the old Brooklyn Dodgers before they moved. He said one time that he didn't care how well a person could hit the ball, how fast they could run, how well they could throw the ball. He said if they weren't as loose as ashes, he wouldn't hire them. We've got to be loose as ashes to let it flow freely. And that's really what this lesson has to do. You know, Halliwell points out that some people, unwise to nature's method, set up a different one. When they meet an obstacle, they stop their progress to collect their forces and put up a fight to remove it. Now, this resistance they set up causes friction. Friction causes an irritation, an inflammation. Now, for this reason, many people's lives are hard and exacting. The waste of human energy is appalling. People in every walk of life are breaking down and wearing out like obsolete machinery. Remember, it's not the movement of a machine that wears it beyond use and service. It is friction. Friction is opposition and resistance. If we go through life fighting, opposing, resisting, arguing, we are bound to meet with many obstacles and likely become so occupied fighting them that we lose sight of our real objective. As I'm just going over this, I'm thinking of a person that I really like him, but this is the story of his life, and he cannot see this. If we go through life fighting, opposing, resisting, arguing, we are bound to meet with many obstacles and likely become so occupied fighting them that we lose sight of our real objective. If we're always getting prepared for the next problem that comes along, we can expect plenty of them. Whereas if we strive to make little of the obstacle and keep our mind on the objective or the desire we set out to gain, we may have to wind around and around, but we're going to persevere. We will ultimately win. We'll reach the goal. I remember a fellow one time teaching me a law. He said, when you put good out, good comes back, but very rarely right away. When you put bad out, it comes right back. And he referred to it as the psychological law of reciprocity. And he used the metaphor of martial arts to explain it. And if you could see two people yelling at each other, he said, let's take karate. He said, karate's a very hard form of martial arts. You whack me, I whack you. You kick me, I kick you. And you both wear yourself out. Then he said, there's judo. He said, that's where you take the strength of the other person's shot and put them down with it. You may win the battle, but you lose the war. He used Churchill as an example. He says, Churchill was a master at psychological judo. Apparently, Bessie Braddock, a member of parliament from Liverpool, one time said, Sir Winston, you're drunk and disgusting. And he said, yes, madam, I am. And he said, and you're ugly. However, he said, tomorrow morning, I will be sober. And there's another story about him where George Bernard Shaw, when he brought his play Pygmalion to the stage, we know now as My Fair Lady, he apparently sent Sir Winston an invitation, and then on the bottom of it wrote a little personal note, bring a friend if you have one. Well, Churchill sent him back a note saying he was sorry that he was not going to be able to attend. He had a prior commitment that he felt compelled to keep. But he said, if the play's still running this second night, I'd be glad to come and see it. Well, you see, that's psychological judo. You win the battle but lose the war. There's so much of this going on, and we say the person's quick that uses this, but they're not very bright. Well, then there's the one that we're referring here to, the law of non-resistance, which is Aikido. Somebody takes a shot at you, you duck and let it keep on going. They take another shot and you duck and let it keep on going. And when they've worn out and expended all their energy, you're as fresh as a daisy and you can gently lead them to where you want them to go. Well, that's what we're talking about here. You know, let's forget the fighting. Let's forget resisting. You cannot change another person. It's like I quoted Huxley a while ago, the only corner of the universe you can change is yourself. And you may not be able to change the conditions or the situation, but you can change your perception of it. And with an understanding of this law and the proper use of your intellectual factor called perception, you can start moving in the right way and flow as freely as the stream.
Most dreams come out in a small amount, and the change that you're going to make and I'm going to make in this practice of a greater experience of the law of non-resistance, the stream is usually small, struggling at the beginning, and it has the most difficult time. It's because in the beginning there seem to be so many obstacles in its path, and it is ever winding around to avoid these direct oppositions. But silently, it uses the law of non-resistance, and as it does so, it just grows stronger in volume and force. When it becomes a larger stream and then a river, its path is more direct, and the obstacles become less and less. Then it is not far from the mighty ocean, and you and I are like that. We have our hardest tests and delays while we are still weak in our power of understanding. But as we strike out on this path, the obstacles and the tests will be there. It's a period of undoing of our old thinking. It's a period of opportunity for us to have some pop quizzes on our daily life about, am I going to be non-resistant or am I going to revert to the gravitational pull of the patterns of my past? And you will be tested. But the wise ones don't fight the obstacles. Just bless the obstacle and keep moving towards that which you are seeking, that which you are planning, yearning to bring forth in your life. And over time, your course becomes more direct. You begin to recognize an obstacle before you're fighting it. You begin to see it as an obstacle and go, oh, and you know exactly how to maneuver. And actually, over time, that obstacle can be used as a stepping stone. Halliwell tells the story about a woman who asked him to help her, and she explained that her home was mortgaged and it was near the time for her to make a payment. She didn't have the money, and she had converted her home into a rooming house, hoping to get, you know, money enough to pay her bills, and she was a widow. And it was in an era when women had a very difficult time making their own money. She wasn't able to keep her roomers there because they were so quarrelsome and critical, and the house was always in an uproar. Nobody was content, and she was frustrated, and she was filled with strain and anxiety. So Halliwell explained to her about the law and that she must apply that law even in the situation she was in. She must not oppose the good, but strive to work with it. Now, you can see that in a situation where it looks like the rumors are the problem, the people that are in the house are the problem, they're creating the uproar. So she didn't quite know how to do this at first because there was all this friction and confusion in the home, but he convinced her to go back and use the law of non-resistance. And she tried to do this, but she had been so exacting and unkind that she found it really hard herself to be non-resistant because she was resisting what was going on in her home. But that evening, as she entered the dining room, she decided to just go in with a smile. And if she went in and acted as if the place were exactly what she hoped it would be, she went in with a smile. And she wasn't even quite aware of it, but the folks were so startled at the sudden change in her that they could hardly eat for wondering what was going on. And that smile was the first smile some of them had ever seen from her, and others declared it was the first time in months that they'd remembered. One man was heard to utter as she went into the kitchen, "Wow, that old lady's getting soft." And more thought so later that evening when they heard her greet one young man who had been behind in his rent. She greeted him pleasantly and said she was sorry he'd missed his dinner. After a few weeks of this new plan, the woman began to enjoy it. And it was interesting because she herself had opened up. She saw her folks in a different light. Instead of thinking of them as cheats and liars and a quarrelsome lot, she began to see the good in them. And she grew to like them more and more as a part of a family. And they, too, became different. The family gathering at the table was looked forward to as a happy time, and it had grown. Even the young man who had tried to dodge her because of his arrearage and his rent had entered into a spirit of the new home, and he changed, and he got a job, and he paid his bills. And she made light of the many obstacles and confusion that appeared and slowly worked around them. She held in mind her objective. This, in turn, melted down the hardness in herself and her circumstances. There is no lack of good. There is no disconnect in us except by our thinking from the good we would have.
In thinking through what you're saying here, and then taking a look at something that Halliwell mentions that takes us back a couple of thousand years, and that I heard as a little child in Sunday school. He uses a verse where Jesus expressed the law more simply. He said, I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them that despitefully use you. Well, you know, I used to think, that doesn't make any sense at all when I was a kid. But I understand it now. You see, in studying this statement, one might at first think that the master was favoring the enemies, the opponents. Not at all. Jesus was speaking to all who desire to use this law of non-resistance. To extend a loving thought to anyone or anything removes the opposition and enmity that once seemed there. The removal must first be in the person's consciousness. Once the thought of enmity is removed from your consciousness, you're not going to attract the same condition again. The only thing we can do is work on our own mind. Like I keep quoting Huxley because that's so true. We're the only thing we can change. We can't change anything. Outside, we can only change what's going on inside. And so when we remove this resistance, our whole life starts to flow like the stream that you were talking about, Mary. Do good to them that hate you, because in doing good, you are raised above the thought of hate and hate that cannot touch your life. What you're doing is really controlling the vibration that you're in. The vibration you're in is going to dictate what you attract. So you see, people are always fighting what's going on around them. They keep attracting more stuff to fight. Where the person that doesn't fight it, they seem to live in a different world. Now, I've lived in both worlds. It's like Sophie Tucker says, I've been rich and I've been poor. Rich is better. I don't want to fight with people. I'm not really very good at confrontation. I would just as soon step aside and let it go by. And that's what this lesson's teaching us. Calls forth the highest good in you when you do this. That's what it does. It calls forth the highest good. Now, the highest good within you can only attract the highest good from another. And to attract such good, you're running around all opposition and abuse. Thus, to live the law with others about you does not especially favor the others so much as it favors you. It affects others in that it takes away from them their weapons of hate and malice, revenge and the like. Like, if somebody comes in and accuses you of doing something, rather than fighting them, say, I really feel bad. I'm sorry that that happened. I apologize. And once you admit you're wrong, what are they going to do? It just brings it to a halt. I remember one time, I've got to tell you a story. I was in an office cleaning business when I first read Think and Grow Rich. And that business became very prosperous. We were operating Toronto, Montreal, Boston, Cleveland, Atlanta, London, England. It was pretty interesting. But when it started, it was very small. And I first had a few people working with me, and I got a call from a doctor. I won't mention his name, but I do remember him very well, a dentist. And he was screaming through the phone. And I had learned this law with respect to handling complaints. And so he didn't want to talk to anybody but me. So I went over to see him. He had taken one of those little paper doilies that they would put on the little ceramic tray that they had for their tools. Well, he had one of those on the floor, and he swept some dust on it and left a note for the cleaner, what is this? And the cleaner wrote a note back, if you don't know what it is, send it to a lab and have it analyzed. Now, that didn't do anything to put that doctor in a good mood. So I took full responsibility for it. I says, my company, I'm responsible, and totally disarmed them. And that's what we do when we do this. If a person resists a situation, he'll have it with him. That's just the way it is. If he tries to run away from it, like a shadow, it follows him. And repeatedly, he'll be met again. If he ignores the hardness of the condition and fearlessly works around it, he'll find time when the hard condition will have been absorbed and removed. Accept the condition as some evidence of good. Look for that good. And being acceptable to it, more and more evidence will appear that you're on the right track. We've got to quit resisting things. We've got to quit fighting back. This doesn't make you weak. This makes you strong. The real truth, as we study into this, we'll be able to see the person that uses the law of non-resistance is not a weak person. The weak person will fight back. It takes strength just to say next and let that flow on by and go in the right direction.
Agree with thy adversary is what you're saying. So you went to the dentist's office and you just agreed with him. And it completely dissolves the fight back. And what you and I, we're in a universe of good. Our friend Michael Beckwith says God is good all the time. If we are in a universe that is ever-present, always all that can be, you and I are then an evolving experience of allowing that allness, that next version of what's possible for us and in us to come forth. The edge of our becoming is what we call our condition. The edge of our becoming is what we call our adversary. So to agree with what looks like it's in our way is to allow ourselves to get bigger than that adversary. To agree with your worthy opponent leaves that opponent defenseless and without the need of any armament, which you saw in Bob's story. To offer no resistance makes it easy for each one of us to be amicable. And the one who thought them to be your enemy, over time, they stop being your enemy because there's no reward in it. Whatever that resistance is just released. So when Jesus talks about being meek, and we're using his example because there's now science that describes what it means to be aligned with the greater field of possibility, but it came out of a couple thousand years ago when he was speaking of these laws of living himself, and other great teachers of all traditions were saying the same things, that blessed are we who understand what it means to be non-resistant. There's a kind of humbleness that we can begin to embrace when we realize how silly it is and actually how stupid it is for us to try to fight the law. Imagine standing in front of the ocean and you say to it, I'm going to stop you. It works much better if we understand the law of buoyancy and we allow the ocean to lift us up. It delights to lift us up when we work with it. Blessed are the meek. Seems odd to understand at first, but it transforms the difficulty, dissolves the difficulty, and we rise above it. I heard a story once where Abraham Lincoln, in his presidency, suffered a tremendous amount of criticism and mean-spiritedness about the way he looked and the decisions he made and where he came from, and there were many, many critics, a couple of whom he actually invited to be on his cabinet. But there was a woman once in one of his speeches who said to him, President Lincoln, you need to destroy your enemies. And he turned and he looked at her and he said, Madam, when I make my enemies my friend, have I not destroyed my enemies? Very, very potent and powerful. The practice of this is where the power is. So as you listen to this lesson, you and I can both go, well, you know, there may be something to this, but you will know there's something to it if you will just take it and employ it.
That's a great quote, and it ties into that psychological law of reciprocity. All this information is so good that it has to be internalized. We've got to really pay attention to it, and it's through the repetition of listening to this recorded message over and over and over again that we get the information planted in our mind. We don't have to be an easy mark or doormat for anyone, for there's a greater power to be reckoned with. The power of the law when we use it. The law reads that we attract what we expect. So if a person believes that they're an easy mark, a doormat, a weakling, if he expects to suffer imposition and must resort to warlike means for his protection, then they that take up the sword perish by the sword. You see, the law of life reacts upon us according to our understanding and application. The meek person does not mean that we are submissive to the conditions of discord and disorder. We are meek only to the law. Meekness, then, is that strength appropriated when we do not argue, when we do not become angry or boastful and proud, when we do not insist upon having your rights in a quarrelsome manner. Meekness is the steel of one's nature. It is enduring. Meekness is the strength by which you win an argument by refusing to argue. When differences of opinion arise and your opinion is right, the real victory lies in the fact that right is right, regardless of what others may say about it. You see, I think really where our problem comes in here, we're worried about what other people think. Do you think I'm weak because I don't fight back? And really, it's none of my business what you think. And it isn't really important to my life what you think. What's really important is what I think. And when I can face those situations with a meek attitude and be strong to the law within me, I've got to like myself a lot better. Now, I have practiced this. I have to admit, on occasion, I do react. And when I do, I don't like myself. Now, I can apologize, but I've done it, and I've set up that vibration, so I have to learn from it. When I work with this law, I really do like myself, and I like myself a lot better. And so I think that this law is something that we really want to study. And I know you agree, Mary, that it's a science. It really is.
You know, Bob, I think what you just said is so important, because liking ourselves, feeling good about ourselves, comes out of being in harmony with who we really are. And what you've described is that when we are in harmony with the law of our own being, which in this particular lesson shows how we practice that, bringing ourselves into greater harmony with the law of our own being, the law of life, through the practice of non-resistance, what happens is an increase in self-esteem. We value ourselves more. We feel more of who we really are. You know, in science, Hollowell says that you recognize the spirit of meekness as cooperativeness or persistent application, accurate computation, perfect harmony, symmetry in design and color. But the simplest illustration can be seen in our application of the law of nature. We exercise the spirit of meekness in accepting the terms of nature, to just be more fully cooperative with her, with the way nature is, and then the more abundantly we are blessed. Now, the spirit of meekness does not mean that we allow ourselves to be abused, that we stay in situations that are harmful to ourselves or others, but the how we move beyond the experiences that are less than the life we're choosing to live is we're not resisting those circumstances, we move beyond them. Do not allow yourself to stay in a situation that is less than life-giving for you. Transform that through the law of non-resistance. And you can only do that when you have a very clear image of where you're going. The stream knows in some part of its own nature that it is being drawn to a larger stream, a river, that is being drawn by a larger stream to the ocean. There is a magnetic pull towards the greater, and that same pull is at work in you and me. Through the practice of meekness, non-resistance, every one of us can be benefited.
I think the way Raymond Hollowell brings this particular session in for a landing is beautiful. I would like to suggest that you listen to these words very carefully. They could really be carved in granite and set on your desk somewhere. He said, remove and dissolve every obstacle by blessing it and being willing to understand it. Mark it no longer a stumbling block, but a stepping stone leading to your highest good. I want to repeat this. Remove and dissolve every obstacle by blessing it and being willing to understand it. Mark it no longer as a stumbling block, but a stepping stone leading to your highest good. This is Bob Proctor.
And Mary Morrissey. Thank you.